aid organization Band-Aid, centered around famine relief in Ethiopia at that time. And after he put that group together and they had this hit song, Do You Know It's Christmas, which I'll play for you. Some of you might recognize it. The United States popular artists responded with which tune again?
We Are the World.
We Are the World, exactly. Right. And so what was the aid organization that was started related to that? Do you remember?
USA for Africa.
Yes. Or who's, you're up there. Great. Thank you. Right. USA for Africa. So what ends up happening is one of the first mega events, really what we consider the mother of all mega events, takes place in the summer of 1985, Live Aid. And I mentioned Tuesday that a precursor to this was the concert for Bangladesh that George Harrison put together, and was the first concert of its kind to raise a significant chunk of money for relief, you know, humanitarian relief in another country. This happened to be Bangladesh. So that's sort of the context of where this term mega event or this event is born. And I wonder what you think the definition, of a mega event is.
Well, we were talking about this, and I said in history there have certainly been mega events, you know, as far as great big exciting. And she says like feeding Christians to the lions, you know,
things like that.
So
yeah.
Or in Native American history, the Song of the Powwow and stuff. But that's just putting this.
It's on charity.
Yeah.
Sure. So, but mega makes you think of something
big.
Yeah. Right. So we're really talking about concerts that are more than a charity concert or like a benefit concert, right? This is not just about raising money, and it's not just one concert. A mega event, by definition, has to happen in multiple places. So the ones we're going to look at, first, the Live Aid starts out in two cities. Anybody know which ones they were? London.
London.
And my hometown, Philadelphia. Well, I adopted it as my hometown. I really grew up outside of Philly in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And I'm a child of the 80s, and I remember this day, you know, this event. And it's I love that I get to come back around now as an adult and, like, take a look at it and delve into the issues surrounding it. So that's just neat for me. But, yeah, so two cities. Then we have Live 8 in 2005, same, almost exactly 20 years to the day, July 2nd. That happens in London, Philly, Tokyo, Sydney, or Rome. I could be confusing a few of these cities with Live Earth, which comes in 2007. Yes, Craig?
Did the artists make any attempt to appear at the different venues, or each city has a separate lineup?
No, each city has a separate lineup. It'd be nearly impossible to coordinate that travel schedule. So that's the timeline here with these major events. We haven't really had another one since July 7, 2007, when Live Earth happened. And it's an enormous undertaking because you're coordinating across the globe many, many different aspects of a performance, right? What do you think has to go into putting on a concert?
Stage production.
Everything in the stage production. Light, sound, the set, security. What else?
Concessions at the site.
Concessions.
The crowd management, the site.
Marketing, everything, housing. Yeah, all dealing with artists' contracts, right?
The writer's list.
Right, or putting together, you know, a policy even that just says, you may have these contracts that you usually sign for your performances, but we're not going to honor those. You're going to do it this way, right? So there's all of those kinds of negotiations that go into it. So that's the timeline. And just as a little refresher, I want to show you the Band-Aid finale, or the finale from London. And then we'll move through a couple other video clips as we talk through worksheet, just remember that these mega events originate out of a crisis, right? Generally humanitarian crises. So we have a crisis of poverty, or as in and hunger with African famines. We have places being ruined by natural disasters, violence and politics, like when all of the turmoil was happening in Central America, right? There were plenty of concerts that lend themselves to this kind of charity rock, as it's sometimes termed. But they're not on the same scale as these particular mega events. So, yeah.
Is Bob Yelp off and Bonna the ones that basically, I'm trying to imagine it, if you run in that circle,
yeah.
The two of them are having a glass of wine and say, let's call all our favorite people to do
yes.
this one event, and then those people kind of let those two guys lead. Like if
yeah.
I wanted to play my favorite song and I'm, I don't know, some famous artist, they can go, no, that wouldn't be appropriate. We want you to play this one instead, and I'm going to go, okay. There really
yeah.
are just a couple of
people really,
in charge.
It really is. Bob Geldof set the tone way back in 85. He was just so enraged by the situation that, you know, the West, there's a quote about the millions of pounds of vegetables that, you know, were wasted and left to rot in England that year alone,
uh-huh.
compared to this famine he was seeing on a trip to Africa and in the BBC special reports and what have you. So he really is the stimulus behind all of this. That's why he's such a central figure, a central celebrity to justice work in the popular music realm, right? People, he's legitimized, I was talking about this Tuesday, he's legitimized because of this long history now in this work. And he has tons of friends. I mentioned Tuesday how his network is vast because it's not just performers. He knows producers, he knows people in the media. You know, he's got his tentacles everywhere. So that's what makes him such a good leader here. Bono is one of his best friends, and he believed strongly in it too, so he put a lot of his efforts in the last 20 years behind it all.
Thank you.
And
yep.
I've got kind of a follow-up question.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming that none of the artists are paid
right.
for their work. I mean, is it up to them to get there and
yeah.
put their own hotel bill
right.
and all that?
Yes.
It's all donated.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, there is, we'll talk about how things have evolved since this initial thing, because the way these events are put together now, there is so much social consciousness around how it's put together, what materials are used and all that. There's a great extra segment on the Live Earth DVD that I'll share with you that talks about those kinds of issues. So we start with kind of like, we're throwing it together. We're throwing these people together that we want to sing on a Do They Know It's Christmas tune to raise money. Then we bring these people together for a concert the following summer. And they learned a lot after they put it together. They learned that they had to tell the consumers, right, or odd fans, how this money was going to be used for famine relief. You know, at the time, Bob Geldof was saying, just call up and give us your money, and he was really, really confrontational, right? It was very, that was his style then. And it worked. They raised $67 million. This goes on that little chart in your worksheet, sort of distinctions between these events. Raised $67 million on the day of the event, but Band-Aid overall, in that short time period, raised over $151 million for famine relief. But then Bob Geldof's learning on the fly. He has to learn how to get all this aid to, like, through the trucks to the aid agencies in Ethiopia, and there were some problems there. And so he's been criticized for that, or Band-Aid's been criticized for that, but you know, they kept learning and changing their how they got everything done. Right? It's like the NGOs that John Nunes has been talking about, they know who to work with, right? Bob Geldof didn't know who to work with on the ground in Africa, and he had to learn all of that. I do know he worked with like Oxfam and some other British-centered NGOs. So anyway, that was then. and they learned a lot after 20. 20 years, and we'll see that in just a minute. But I want to show you how this all started. So I need to go search.
Two?
Oh,
yeah,
that's way faster.
Do you want to go back to the menu?
Yes.
Thank you.
kind of cheesy, right? Like, there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time. What's the point of that text, right? But the tune is catchy, right? People still sing it. And that's the point of a song that's meant to get a lot of airplay and make a lot of money, right? So in a sense, while you can critique the content and even the delivery in this sense, because there are people that didn't know what they were doing, right? Buried in the music, and that happens often at some of these bigger events. They still accomplish the goal of gaining a lot of attention and raising a lot of money. And that's what I want you to remember about Live 8. Okay. Now Live 8, hang on. So that's they accomplished all of these four functions of mega events. And this is from a scholar named Rebbe Garofalo. He's studied protest music for his entire career, and he's somebody to read if you ever come across his work. So fundraising, we mentioned that. Consciousness raising on the part of the public, right? They did that because they, not only with a major concert like this, but they also put together special videos and got people organized on the ground to get involved. Artist activism, they got artists to speak out their beliefs or at least participate in something that gave voice to what they believed in. And we would have heard more of those kinds of statements from artists between their sets, between their songs, that kind of thing. And then agitation, that really means mobilization, right? Mobilization of the public. So writing letters, signing petitions, giving money, getting involved. They did all of that. So by the time they come to July of 2005, they're no longer interested in the monetary part of raising awareness of social justice work. They finally come to this place in their study of economics, and by they I mean Bob Geldof and Bono. They finally understand that they have to try to work with politics and politicians and policy to really make a serious dent in the problems that Africa faces. We've talked about, if you've gone to John's sessions, he's talked about the extreme poverty and putting people to work and things that need to happen. We've even mentioned interest rates, was it? You that mentioned that, Craig, today? The debt in countries that have no way to pay it back with their current infrastructure, it's incredible. So Bono decides debt relief, trade policies, reform trade policies, debt, AIDS, addressing the AIDS epidemic, trade issues in Africa, those are the most important humanitarian issues of our time, of the early 21st century. So he forms a group called DATA. And along with the One campaign, they start pushing politicians, and Bono's such a superstar that politicians don't mind having their picture taken with him. So he gets to meet with George Bush, and he gets to meet with the top economists in the United States, and in Britain. He meets with Tony Blair and all of that. And what the plan Geldof and Bono decide upon is to not raise money this time, but raise awareness, and mostly raise the awareness of not only the public, but these majorly powerful, that sounds intelligent, but these really powerful men who are representatives of the G8. And I asked on Tuesday, what's the G8?
Most developed countries in the world.
Right, the 8 most developed, would you also say the 8 richest countries in the world, right? So that includes Germany, Russia even, Japan,
Italy, France,
yeah. And then sometimes you hear about the G20, you know, and it expands. I believe it's this weekend the G8 is meeting outside of Toronto, Canada. So, and what's interesting is what Bono and the Live 8 concerts do in 2005 is have people sign an online petition that says, we want you G8 leaders to sign an agreement that you're going to double aid to Africa over the next 5 years. And you're going to work on things like forgiving debt and all those issues that we mentioned, right? So this actually happens. They feel successful, Geldof and Bono, because the G8 leaders actually sign an agreement to that. And now if you go to the One organization, have you heard of the One organization, one.org? Data and One have combined into one powerful NGO. And they are saying that, let's see, where's my complete statistics? Now by the end of this year, a lot of this agreement was supposed to be addressed. And actually, much of it has. The rate of aid to Africa has increased. From countries such as the US, Canada, and Japan, we've exceeded our goals, which matches what John said about, you know, the Bush administration actually giving lots of aid to Africa. But Italy is the country that is lagging far behind. By the end of this year, the G7, so minus Russia, will have delivered 61% of the original amount of money, $25 million, pledged to double the aid to Africa. Does that make sense? So you know, sometimes we hear these messages that, well, governments and can't get it done, right? Well, they can't get it done alone, that's for sure. But they just stall and stall and stall. But here's an instance where things have been happening. Now, whether they're the smart aid, as John was mentioning, right, or the smartest aid, that may remain to be seen, but this is an instance where promises were kept to a degree. And Data and One now expect that maternal child health is going to be the next focus, not debt relief and trade issues, but maternal child health. And as we've heard through this week about poverty issues, when you strengthen women, you strengthen children, and you have a future. So I think this is in line with much of what we've talked about with regard to justice.
Do you know if their giving has helped proportionally to the wealth that the countries have?
You mean, like, are we giving the poorest countries the most money?
No. Is the U.S. giving more than, say, Italy?
Oh, I don't know that offhand, but if you went to one.org, it's an incredible website. It gives you a breakdown of all the issues that Africa faces. And I sometimes think that it's really not fair of the Western world to lump Africa together as one entity, right? This is a huge continent with huge countries, right? With individual issues. But in any case, they do this wonderful job of addressing every area of agriculture, education, health. It's a beautiful website, and that would probably give you, you know, the most up-to-date information about that kind of thing. So, Live 8 was a pretty successful event, and I want to show you a clip from the Philadelphia concert, where Will Smith, who's from Philadelphia, everybody know who Will Smith
is?
Yes. he gives a little intro. So they're using celebrity power, not just musicians, but actors, in this case with Live 8. It's like they realized the more popular the people that represent the cause, the more attention will gain, and then the more support, et cetera, et cetera. I need to make sure we have at least like 20 minutes for the live Earth thing because it's an incredible clip. Maybe not quite that long, but just can someone keep me on track with time?
You want 20 minutes for that?
Yeah.
So 20 to 5?
I think we'll be okay. But. So we expand our technology here. That was one of the coups of Live Aid, was that here we had technology in the 80s to broadcast concerts in two places in the globe simultaneously. Same thing happens with Live 8, except it's more countries. cheap. You see now also in the names of the performers, maybe a few people that you don't recognize as American rock stars. For example, this Dynamite, Dido is Australian, Yusu Ndour is an amazing African performer, a global musician. He's really been a part of a lot of these concerts, even the 46664 concert I mentioned last time, that on Tuesday, the Nelson Mandela Foundation concert, and you actually see Will Smith wearing that t-shirt.
There are over 3 billion people watching you right this minute. I want to say hello to Paris and Rome and Berlin and Tokyo and Toronto and Johannesburg, and right this second in 84 degrees in Philadelphia, 1 million people are on the streets. Your brothers and sisters on this weekend of independence in America. Let's make it a weekend of interdependence. Will you please say aloud to Philadelphia, welcome
up.
America to Live 8. Here's Will Smith.
TV, dies for lack of drugs that we here in Philly and you in Berlin and you in Moscow can buy at a pharmacy every 3 seconds. Dead. Just like that, someone else is dead. Just like that. Every 3 seconds, somebody's son, somebody's daughter, somebody's future is gone. Now in just a moment, I'm gonna ask you all to take out your hands and snap your fingers with me every 3 seconds. Now in that moment, we can let you know that today we are calling on the 8 most powerful world leaders to do what they can to end this daily tragedy. With a stroke of a pen, 8 men can make a world of difference in the lives of billions of people. Now we can forgive debt, but we cannot forget that right now, a child in Africa dies every 3 seconds. Please watch this. That's how it's done. Everybody, let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. All over the world. Here we go. Everybody. Everybody around the world. Let these world leaders know. Thank you for being a part of Live Aid. Raise your voices as one to welcome a group that...
So, what I love about that segment is that it does everything a mega event should do, the positives about a mega event. It draws your attention, right? Raising awareness or consciousness raising. And both times, Live Aid and Live Aid, they use a video. The one at Live Aid was a video of a starving child in Ethiopia simply trying to get up and move. Very slow. I mean, and it was all of the song, I don't know who it's by, maybe someone can help me. Who's gonna raise you up when you fall? I can't think of who it is. I want to say like it's not the right, yeah. When you fall. So in any case, I mean, no words, right? No words in that one. Just an image of a child, or no talking in that one. And we see the same thing with the one clip there with all the actors and musicians. And then what I love about that moment also is that instead of the raised fist in protest, which we see often in politicized moments, right? You have this as a sign of solidarity and reminder of what the real issue is. So this is another distinction I would love for you to take away, which is at a charity concert or just a simple fundraising concert, you would not necessarily hear all of those messages, right? It would be, come buy this ticket to this concert that features all these different performers that you love. And that's sort of it, right? There might be some aid organizations with stands out there for you to sign up to help and things like that. But these events, because they're so large, and many times they're the start of a campaign, or they're taking a campaign through several stages. So this was the sort of the end of, well, I guess kind of the middle. It was one of the starting places for the one organization and Data to really move with debt relief and AIDS treatment and what have you in Africa. Did you disagree with that?
No.
Oh, okay.
I just remember who it was. Foreigner.
Foreigner. So anyway, I love those moments. I'll play for you just a little of this following group because Jeannie, the one of the black singers in this group, Black Eyed Peas, is Will I Am,
mm-hmm.
who wrote the song you mentioned on Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah, yes, we could.
Knows exactly where the love is. The Black Eyed Peas.
So this song they're gonna sing was popular at the time. So timeliness. successful pop
group.
Okay, they perform in all kinds of different styles, but quite often in a sort of hip-hop based style, which you're kind of seeing now. But they've been able to be political also. One of their latest records has several tracks that have political messages there, or statements of their of someone's belief in the group, right? And so whereas Beyonce, that I mentioned on Tuesday, sort of keeps her political side in a different realm, these guys mix it up, and they're successful with it. It's not like they're losing fans because they share political messages.
Like the Dixie Chicks.
Right. That's a whole issue with genre. Country fans didn't expect three females in that genre to take on some of that philosophy. So, okay. Any questions about Live 8? Yeah?
Just curious, how do you compare the effectiveness of music like Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel and, you know, the protests of the 60s to Live 8 and the 80s?
You know, the whole world of protest music has changed. It's not only technology that's changed, right? So you the sort of acoustic folk music and music based in the labor movement, right? Like they got resurrected in the 50s and 60s. That stuff is still around. There are plenty of independent artists that perform it along those lines. But the commercial music industry has changed so much, and the artist factor, like what an artist has to say, how they want to say it, is so pushed down in this day and age in the big record companies, right? Because they're concerned with the bottom line of selling units. In the critiques of the record industries, it's all about units. And this sort of lack of artistry. So you have a lot of competing issues. You have music quality, you have art access to it, because you really have to dig sometimes, or you have to learn word of mouth, who's performing the music with the messages you want to hear, right? So I would say these events are almost necessary for this generation to see that you can use music or musical performance to make a difference. Because they're not seeing it, generally speaking, in popular culture at all, or very little. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Would anybody disagree?
Not that I disagree.
Okay.
I would say that, more to answer the question, the citing like the Black Eyed Peas and especially U2, I've been a huge fan of U2 and Bono since 1978. What they do is just as effective now, according to the culture. Just the culture has changed, the music has changed, but the heart is still the same. They're still reaching out and still presenting a ministry in a fashion that is relevant to the culture. So it still gets to the kids,
right,
one way or another.
Right.
And it still attacks the issues that are relevant now, just as Simon and Garfunkel and the,
that's a very good
and
point.
Everybody, you know, it's the same thing. It just looks different, but it's still serving the same purpose.
Very good point. In fact, in the next clip you'll see there's a quote from an interview with Melissa Etheridge, who she says, "I feel like it's my responsibility to speak out." Not every artist feels that way. They don't want to be politicized, but she does.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's an example of the heart being in the same place, just other generations later.
It's like U2, Bono, Dave, whether you know it or not, three of the members of the band have been saved since 1978. I mean, their first most successful album is called The Unforgettable Fire. And what Bono was singing, what Bono and the band have been singing about ever since then is, as we understand, the unforgettable fire of faith in your relationship with God and the Holy Spirit. That's what the unforgettable fire is. And they have had a 30-year, they're the biggest band on the planet, period, hands down. They're putting on this show that they have just had to cancel part of because of Bono's injury, was the largest production ever made in the planet. Over 120 40-foot tractor trailers around. And that's because of their faith and their message.
Yeah. So the kinds of things
it's not so much cryptic. I mean, it can be taken both in a secular fashion, but if you also listen to it as a person of faith, you can listen to it and go, oh yeah, they're singing about that also. So the message is getting out.
Okay, so we're moving to live Earth. 7707 is when this occurred all over the globe. Notice, as we watch this, the entire event is just like steeped in symbolism and message. I mean, they wanted everybody to understand exactly what their goal was, which was, in your chart here, so you can see how different it is, it's personal commitments. It's not just signing a petition or contacting a legislator. It's change how you live, right? Be aware of what you're doing to the planet. And I was saying earlier to some of the folks that I think that the issues of climate change have such a strong link to the issues of poverty that all of this is appropriate in the realm of what's being discussed this week about justice, especially in regard to poverty. So we're going to skip Act 1. That is Al Gore talking about how he went from a slideshow to the movie An Inconvenient Truth, and then how that turned into this event, that momentum turned into this event. How it's put together and what some of the artists believe about the event. That's the SOS.
From day one, that concerts focused on saving the global environment needed to walk the walk and not just to talk the talk.
They've been involved in justice issues in Tibet for a long time.
Just get people mad.
We know as bands about flying we do, about the lights we use and the electricity that we use, that we're not very green. And so it's great to feel like it is possible to actually do things in a kind of energy saving way.
To be honest with you, I'm slightly annoyed at this kind of right wing reactionary press now against kind of like the concept of climate change and like bands being wasteful.
I think there's a flawed logic at work because how people aren't gonna be sitting on their asses not breathing all day. They'll be out in their cars doing things, so it's not like they wouldn't move.
So we're asking people to measure, reduce, and offset their own carbon footprint. We can't do that without walking the talk ourselves. So that's what we've done. We've measured the footprint, we've reduced it everywhere we could, and when we couldn't reduce it, we've offset it.
With all the three aspects we go through, energy, waste, and transportation, it really comes down to reducing first. That's the key. It's been a mantra of sustainability for decades. And we've really tried to incorporate that in as our first step to greening live Earth. Events like this trash is unavoidable. You can do a good job in the way you procure certain things to try to minimize it, and also in the way that you dispose of the waste. Make sure that it's not going to your traditional location. Make sure it's not going to your landfills, or just to be fired. Make sure it's being recycled.
Those people standing by garbage bins are volunteers. They are called green volunteers. And they are standing by to make sure people are throwing right things into right bins. The chopsticks, they will be recycled into paper, used, but still pretty clean paper dish. This will turn into toilet roll. This is a plastic cup. It's made of vegetable oil, and it's biodegradable. Now, this is a pet ball. They will be divided as plastic, and petal ball cap, and other plastic, mixed paper, and these are all recyclable.
Also, ladies and gentlemen, Live Earth is going so far as to even green porta potties that come complete with more recycled toilet paper, eco-friendly soap, and all the cleaning products used to maintain this beautiful facility are also environmentally friendly.
So what we're doing here is transforming the
totally experiencing to an art space, but the other thing is that there's a massive environmental bonus because, well, you don't use any water at all. There's a very large decrease in the amount of material that needs to be removed from stock. First of all of the solid material actually stays in the wheelie bin, and by adding the sawdust, what you're actually doing is creating a carbon, nitrogen, oxygen balance that's really appropriate for composting.
Messages that can get flashed on the stage screens.
What people see is they see the lights going on. They don't see the power that's coming in from the windmills. They don't see the power from the biodiesel that's sitting out back behind the stage that's going into the generators.
This entire production, all the energy that we're using for the stage, the lighting, the sound, everything, is all being produced with biodiesel. So that's actually a zero carbon source.
Kevin and his team from the very start have gone to great lengths to set new standards for CO2 reductions, recycled materials, making it extra easy for people who take mass transportation to do so to the concerts.
We work with the artists. We help them figure out what's the most sustainable way they can actually get to the event.
Yeah, Craig is kind of addressing the turboprops.
Lowers the emissions of a flight, taking commercial flights, taking public transportation to the events. The important thing to remember about Live Earth is people can get involved in the solution in different ways.
Hey, I'm Fred from Take the Next Sunday. And I want to show you what I'm
doing to lower my carbon footprint. This is used vegetable oil. We call it WVO for waste vegetable oil. And it's the stuff in the fryers that French fries cook in and Chinese food and all kinds of good stuff. And when they are done with it, they need to get rid of it. So I take it and I filter it and this car runs on it. I'm going to show you how. Come into my lab. Get it into my car. The auxiliary tank is a wheel well here, and this has a heating coil in it. So what you do is you start the car in diesel, and after a couple miles, I'd say 5 minutes, you switch over to vegetable oil. First time I switched was highly uneventful. I was going 60 on the highway, flip it over, and it felt no different. It runs no differently on vegetable oil. All right, we got enough to get to the show today.
So here's how this comes about. You can say it better than I can.
My name is Andre Mica, and I am the executive in charge of production for Live Earth. My job is to produce a 22-hour world feed, which will go to about 130 countries around the world to an audience of somewhere between 2.5 and 3 billion people right now. Our goal is on this show is not to ship a lot of tapes and not to use a lot of tape. It's all said and done, I think we'll be closer to 100 hours. We initially thought we would create a lot of assets that we'd ship around the world. Now what we're doing is using satellite transmission, a much more efficient way to do it than traveling or buying tape.
Perfect there, man. Rock and roll. Great job.
So we're here at World Feed Master Control taking the Australians and the Tokyo Show live. It's about 4:20 in the morning.
So they start there,
about 20 hours
outside of the world, and then just keep coming for 24 hours.
The days leading up to the last, 3 days leading up is actually where you end up then with the most fluidity, changes that need to happen. Mostly, actually, that happens day of on site. So a lot of running around. Just, editorial once you're there and run through the full day of rehearsals prior to the day prior. You're gonna start getting a sense of what really feels good and what could use a little bit of tweaking. So there's a lot of that. There's putting all the artists on the stages within the order in which they played, and then the presenters who would introduce each artist and what the presenter was saying, then the films that ran between it, the PSAs that ran with that as well. The messaging component, the SMS texting the screen. So we sort of massaging all those things into a 9-hour puzzle that really came off with the most integrity and continuity.
I think that in general, the sponsors have been really trying to show that what they're doing is above greenwashing. They know that we're going to demand that everything gets printed on recycled material. We're literally getting down to the nitty-gritty with them, and they're starting, all of the sponsors are starting to really go, okay, we get it. Like, this is a
truly the power of
this is down
popular
to every
culture
last detail.
That
it's time
they
that
can dictate
really
to sponsors how to act versus the other way around.
If it is green and it's
right.
Not greenwashing, then let's talk about it.
The power is not always wrapped up in money.
How are you doing that today, Susan?
What do you think about the flying with this community? Where it originated from and where it's going? We think about how we power the concerts using clean energy. So we hope to create a new standard in the way these events are done and the way concert works out. So we're spending money, resources, and time rethinking about it.
Is this London here?
This is, yeah,
124
London, yeah.
These sets have to be far more put together like an album as opposed to, you know, a TV show. That they have to have consistency, that they have to progress and be sequenced well, that they have to be reflective of the biggest names in the world as well as the names you need to know, and certainly the names that have been core to the cause and that have been really celebrating what it is that, you know, Al has been, you know, talking about and trying to bring awareness to for some time.
So a lot of care goes into who actually gets to play.
Touched a lot of people first time on that day rather than preaching to convert it, so that was a good thing. Having Gore in New York definitely meant that people were more focused on the cause there than maybe they had been in some of the other shows if they were just there with the music.
Today, 2 billion of us have come together in over 130 countries on all 7 continents. So I would like to ask each and every one of you to answer the call and join me in signing this Live Earth Pledge.
Right, a pledge, not a petition.
You know,
pledge to change your lifestyle.
Of people, friends that I haven't heard from since high school, and they were all overwhelmingly supportive of what we're trying to do, saying that, you know, they watch the show, they're going to make changes in their life. So it's definitely affected me personally and the people around me.
I learned an amazing amount in every way, in terms of working with NGOs, in terms of greening, in terms of how to manage different venues, the size of venues, if it's a field versus a stadium, and what's the best way to approach getting your measurements before and after. It was a massive learning experience, and I'm so proud and honored to be a part of it.
When you meet a large event, it's like 2 million people to start a movement over the next 3 to 5 years.
That is set to start a movement, right, over the next 3 to 5 years.
I'm excited more than I can really tell you in words. I had hopes that it would be this big and that there would be this many venues and this many artists. But now that it's about to happen, I'm really thrilled.
Very privileged to be given the honor to come here and to be involved with such a world changing thing.
It's a character.
Something that's a big event for our generation. It's something that starts off a movement, really.
We're just happy to be here, to be part of something, you know, special, something important, you know, worldwide.
I'm very excited, actually. I've just had a peek out the window, and there's an enormous amount of people out there. So it's definitely going to be, you know, the biggest gig of my lifetime.
Here, the night is clear, and your heart is
for these global causes, and this is one that, you know, really strikes a chord of being one of the most important causes ever in humanity.
The climate crisis issue is one of the defining issues of our generation.
I think we were the first kind of generation when we were at school who became aware of the whole issue of global warming. And so it's something that's kind of been imprinted on our psyches for a while.
I mean, just having this one show here would be a tremendous challenge. But having 10 around the world.
Largely are going to inherit this planet, but I think even for someone that might be 40 plus, they're influencers, and that's what we need to create a tipping point.
It's forcing everyone to like step up and keep to their word and making a commitment.
I think it's a great teaching tool. It's a great way to teach people and still entertain them. And no one likes to be preached to too much, and so us musicians, we put a good face on it, I think.
And while they're watching the artist,
there's that spokesperson for a cause that they
weren't aware of before.
We are here on a momentous day for the people of our generation, because together we can get off our backsides and we can do something for the future of mankind. And that's a beautiful thing in here tonight.
I think as entertainers, we find that we have a stage. And if in this entertaining we can present some truth, then I'm honored to be able to do that. I think I have a responsibility to take rock and roll to its roots for what it originally has always been. It's to incite, it's to let people know what's going on, and I take that very seriously.
Industry that's been in full swing for the last 10 years has done a very good job, and there's an element of doubt always. Is it really? Is it us? Is it what? Is it happening? It is happening, so let's just get that point absolutely 100% across.
Kiss the rise around, whatever will be, the future's right.
Variety of styles of music, yes.
This one did create another style.
There shouldn't be the only way to get the message across this and to stage concerts all over the place, but I was thinking about it, and I mean, how else do you do it?
You've got to start somewhere. You start here. Where else is there to start? Who else is doing it? I don't see anyone.
They must not realize that churches are doing it.
You can combine the passion of music with a message and transfer that emotion so that this message continues.
Let's talk tonight's concert and the concerts going on all around the world. Not just about entertainment, but about starting a revolution.
And I feel that we really will make a difference and make a change, and it was all worth the year that we've gone into this. Tomorrow.
I think this can make a huge impact. You know, musicians getting together, we have a voice. And 24 hours of this should definitely get people's attention.
Nowadays, to get everyone's attention, because there's so much noise out there, you need something this big to get the world's attention, and this needs the world's attention.
Like this.
this is important because they're going to listen, you know, and they're going to check it out.
You know, it remains to be seen what happens with it, but I think for us it's just a matter of pointing attention towards it.
When it comes to something like the climate crisis, which is forcing us to really examine who we are as human beings, what is our moral obligation to all those who come after us, all of a sudden we turn to music and art in order to find the ways to communicate and to understand and to feel the nature of our obligation to one another and to the future.
Thank you for coming to Live Earth.
Didn't have a political message like the other ones did, that it was about individual choices and making a pledge to change, which I think is good to bring it back to that individual level, even though it's such a large event. So if you have any questions or comments, let me know, but I know everybody's hungry.